It's actually just you built Neil Young. Wonderful.
You're welcome. We were changing the headline.
Dangerous Crossroads in New York City. I'm your host, Shane.
And I'm your host, Ishan.
And welcome to episode 72 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about how to play everyone's favorite fiend-touched race, tieflings. But first, the party makes a fateful decision in the Morning Glory campaign, and the Faustian Fiddler makes a deal with the devil in the Character Creation Forge.
Before we get to all of that, we promised we would talk about Unearthed Arcana because we are, like, five entries behind at this point.
And we always keep our promises.
Yeah, well, usually. So they've been releasing a new Unearthed Arcana every week for the past month or so. And it sounds like they're going to be doing that until they get through all of the classes. Because each Unearthed Arcana is new subclasses for the existing PHB classes.
They're pretty hit or miss, yeah?
Definitely. So starting with, it's alphabetical. So starting with Barbarian, we got the Ancestral Guardian.
They do get a marking mechanic, and they can protect some allies, which opens up a new space for barbarians.
Yeah, they're actually able to be a tank.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the Storm Herald, which has an aura that causes damage in some fashion, either fire, lightning, or cold are their three themes.
You get a bit of elemental resistance, depending on which one you pick, and then there's some nice movement denial abilities at higher levels.
And then there's the Zealot, which is sort of a more warlordy kind of barbarian.
Yeah, it's got a damage aura. It's got a battle cry that helps allies.
You keep fighting while raging, even if you drop to zero.
Even if you die.
Yeah.
But then you die.
But then you actually die. Yeah. So I don't know. I like the barbarians. This got me excited for the remainder of the Unearthed Arcana.
Yeah, I thought they were fine. I liked the Zealot, but that was probably more because of the flavor rather than necessarily the abilities.
Which is fine. I mean, if the flavor is good enough and the abilities work, I think that's a perfect class because it's not power creeping.
Mm-hmm. I think what we'll need to see is when these sort of come out in a more final form, you need to compare them to the options that already exist. And Barbarian's one of those that has really strong options.
Yeah, I mean, the measuring stick is the Bear Totem Barbarian, right?
Yeah.
Man, it is hard to get other options on the table when Bear Totem exists.
Yeah. Now, sort of on the opposite side of the spectrum is the Bard options. We get two new colleges, Glamour, which kind of deals with Fae, gives you some nymph-like abilities, mass charms, and things like that.
And then the College of Whispers, which is sort of your underhanded spy college.
Yeah, the only thing that really stuck out to me here was that the College of Whispers can poison their weapon, but they can spend their bardic inspiration to deal extra damage with that poisoned weapon at very low levels. And that's the earliest time that you can actually sort of get a damage benefit from your own bardic inspiration. But of course, it is poison damage.
Yeah, and it's the only bard that isn't a party-friendly bard. You know, he's the one who is just selfish. Overall, not a huge fan of either of these.
I agree. And you only get two.
Yeah.
So,
So then the cleric domains.
Okay. Two of these are terrible and one is amazing.
So let's start alphabetically.
Okay.
With the amazing one, the forge domain.
I feel like they took all the abilities that you might want from a fire themed character and just sort of put them in one place. You get heavy armor proficiency. You get the shield spell, heat metal, both of which are amazing. You get AC bonuses that are just always on, some fire resistance, extra divine damage, and then, you know, at the end, let's just give you some fire immunity.
Yep, and you also get that neat kind of handy ability to copy metal items that you've seen. It's like, oh, I can just make a copy of that key, for example.
Yeah, I love that they call it out. They're like, no, GMs. This is what they're supposed to be using it for.
Right. Yeah. And then from a really, really good and interesting domain into the grave, mm-hmm. which is death but watered down,
mm-hmm.
and protection, which is bad.
Forge, I think, is better at protecting other people, honestly.
Yeah, so protection doesn't get the shield spell, which I find weird,
mm-hmm.
But it gets things like compelled duel, which, I mean, yes, in a roundabout way is a form of protection,
yeah.
But also is a really lame way of implementing it.
Yeah, you get the protection fighting style, but they don't call it that.
Right. So overall, I think the cleric domains are lackluster. that forge is probably needs to be
toned down a little bit. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about druid circles.
First one up is dreams. You get a nice daily pool of healing. I like the sort of low level ribbon ability where you can protect a campsite. You know, the light from inside the campsite can't be seen from outside it, and everyone gets a perception bonus. That was really cool.
Yeah.
You do get a nearly at will teleportation ability. You still use your movement, but you can teleport, except that you can't do it again for 1d4 rounds.
I like that. I mean, adding another die roll in here, probably not a great thing for keeping the game moving, but...
Very true, but some of you may remember that from 3.5, the prestige class Horizon Walker, where you could cast Dimension Door once every 1d4 rounds, which was sort of like one, your high-level capstone ability. So I liked that throwback. It's not necessarily the most useful thing.
We also have this 14th level ability that allows you to dispel magic when you heal an ally. Which I can't tell if that is really ill-advised or just pointless. Because I'm trying to remember all the games that we've played at high level. How many buffs did we really have floating around? And how many debuffs did we really have floating around? And when were the times where that was worth it? You know?
Yeah. Like, it's free, so that's neat. But like, druids aren't primary healers to begin with. And the wording makes it so that you cannot choose what effect goes away on that character. It's just all of them. It's the target a creature version of dispel magic, so all their buffs are going away as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's handy for some of the real PC killer kind of effects. You know, I'm thinking of like Beholder Eye Rays and those sorts of things. It might be handy. Also, like the immolation spell, which is a great way to ruin a day.
Yeah, I'd rather have them just not tie it to dispel magic, but just do one of those, you know, wordings where you end an effect or something like that. Yeah. And they've done that with other classes, so it's definitely doable.
Yeah, so that one could be fixed. Then we have the Shepherd.
Which I think you hate.
I hate summoning. I hate anything that's going to slow down combat, and making summoning more attractive is just begging to have more initiative rolls to deal with.
For the most part, I agree. I will point out, though, that this is one of the only ways, maybe the only way, to give your summoned creatures magical attacks and not have them be useless at high levels.
Okay, so right now, this is better than the Beastmaster Ranger at being a Beastmaster.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't seen the Ranger options yet, so maybe, just maybe, after two surveys, Wizards of the Coast heard us and they've given magical attacks to the Beastmaster Ranger.
Fingers crossed. Paws crossed?
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's a summoner. It's the summoner druid, so... Fine, whatever.
Yeah. There's the Circle of Twilight. In opposition to the Circle of Dreams, you have a pool of damage rather than healing, which I think is sort of one of the few times we've actually seen a druid able to add additional damage to their spell effects. That's okay. You get radiant and necrotic resistance, which is also kind of okay. It's relatively lackluster.
Yeah, I think it's a fine alternative to the land druid. Right, so if you're going to be a primary caster druid, this gives you a way to differentiate between that.
Although you are not getting circle spells.
Right, so you've got a lower spell selection, but you can amp up the spells that you do have. I think that's a fine trade-off. That's a classic D&D trade-off.
It's a bit more evokey. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then there's an option for GMs to limit what kind of beast shapes a druid can use for wild shape. And like, as a player of a druid, I actually am okay with this. It makes sense that you can't turn into literally every animal you've ever seen, just a select number of them that you've sort of practiced turning into.
Yeah. Thematically, it's fine. And I think at most tables, I can't imagine this is a big problem. Where I think it's helpful is at Adventures League, you've got a way to kind of codify on your sheet, my druid can turn into these things. And then you'll go and min-max that like you do everything else. But, you know, at least it's... I think this is just a nod to Adventurers League where that could be a bigger problem.
I also like that it can differentiate different druids. You know, you can have two moon druids, but like one turns into canines.
Right.
And another turns into like bears or something like that. You know, and like it shows their personality.
Yeah. So overall, okay with the druids? I mean, I wouldn't be too upset if this were what got published.
Yeah, a couple of mini tweaking.
Yeah. All right, so now we have Fighter.
Overall, this was pretty good, or at least I liked a lot of the ideas that I saw.
So Fighter has a natural problem in that it's right in its name. It's a fighter, so it doesn't get to do a whole lot else, you know? And this isn't going to fix that problem, unfortunately. So it's a bit disappointing for me, but it's got some cool archetypes. some land a little better than others. Yeah. So we've got the Arcane Archer, which we've tried to build in the Character Creation Forge to middling effect.
Yeah, the playtest had a feat that let you do it. I wish this looked more like the Eldritch Knight with actual spells, but these are basically glorified Battlemaster maneuvers that sort of have spell-like effects. So I don't love it.
But then we'd get the Knight, and I think the Knight's pretty cool.
Yeah, it might actually be a little too powerful. You've got a marking mechanic. You get a version of the Sentinel feat.
Well, so let's explain what we mean by marking mechanic, because it's the second time we mentioned it. So okay, not so everyone played 4th edition, myself included.
So in 4th edition, there was an option for all defender classes where you basically sort of called out an enemy, and then they took penalties if they were attacking anyone except for you. So it was like a taunt effect. I don't know what the video game version is, but
it's called Taunt, I think, in World of Warcraft. Yeah,
aggro, something like that.
Yeah, it's a way to maintain aggro is how they call it in the MMO games.
Okay, it's kind of difficult to do in 5th edition as currently written, so it is interesting to see the option.
Yeah, and so it's basically you have disadvantage on attack rolls against other creatures.
The enemy does, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we see a feature that shows up in some of the other fighter archetypes as well, Rapid Strike, which I like the idea of this. It's if you have advantage on an attack roll, you can give it up and instead make an additional attack as a bonus action.
Yeah, so this is going to be right in the wheelhouse for your great weapon fighters. But generally, if you've got a magic weapon or any type of on-hit effects that you can add on, you're going to want to make another attack versus attacking with advantage. So it's a handy little trade-off.
Right. Also, if they have defensive abilities, they're probably only going to be able to use it once.
Right. And then they also get an additional opportunity attack. So if you've already used your reaction in a round, you are then able to make an opportunity attack.
But still just once per turn.
Right.
I don't know how powerful this is, but it is the only time we've really seen it.
I am a little worried about it with things like Warcaster.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it synergizes and, you know, how it is written in the final version.
Yeah, but I mean, overall, I think casting Counterspell and then also making an attack, it's not going to end the game, you know? And it's like a 15th level ability, so yeah. It's like, it's your thing.
Then there's Samurai, which I feel on the whole is a little bit weaker than Knight. You get this nice mechanic where you spend a bonus action and you get advantage on all your attack rolls and resistance to weapon damage for a round.
It's like baby rage.
Yeah. Which is interesting because people often use rage to emulate some sort of like samurai or Iatsu focus.
Yeah.
Thus far.
We do that all the time. We're like, you're not angry. Yeah. You're just drilled in.
You get proficiency in wisdom saving throws, and if you already have that, you can actually pick intelligence or charisma, which is nice.
And you also can add wisdom to your charisma skill checks or ability checks when dealing with nobles, which is super niche, but also super flavorful. So it's a lousy ribbon ability because it'll never come into use.
Unless you're playing a politics game, in which case.
I mean, in which case, yeah, it's pretty neat, you know. I mean, it's going to break your bounded accuracy.
And they also get Rapid Strike as well.
And then finally we have the Sharpshooter, which is a sniper.
Yeah, it does exactly what you think a guy who shoots arrows from far away does.
Yeah, more attacks with arrows and more damage on them.
Mm-hmm. And good eyes.
Yeah. So thoughts overall on the fighter?
I like the direction this is going. You know, there's a lot of new options that I will be happy to see sprinkled throughout many different classes.
Yeah, this is another one of those cases where I think for fighter, you've got the option of being boring and solid with the champion, or you've got the option of having interesting things to do with the Battlemaster, and the other two options are kind of traps, because Eldritch Knight isn't great, and the Purple Dragon Knight is super niche.
Okay. Also not great.
Right. So I think these are viable options. The Knight might be a little too strong, but I think these are in the right range for what I would like to see for fighters.
Yeah,
and also, reclaiming the whole sniper thing with Sharpshooter is interesting, especially because what we saw from the Ranger before made us concerned that the Ranger might become the new sniper.
It has always been one of their archetypes, so this does make me think, all right, you were doubling down on melee Ranger, this had better be good.
Yeah. And then we also said we would make some predictions. So what do you think we're doing all this for? Why every class getting some Unearthed Arcana, Ishan? Just say it.
I know. I still have a hard time thinking we're getting an entirely new source book.
I think it's going to be PHB 2. And I know Wizards of the Coast keeps saying, well, it's not going to be PHB 2 because some people get confused that PHB 2 is just an updated version of the PHB, and we've had upset customers.
No, nobody has ever gotten confused by that.
And we haven't figured out how to call it Volume 2 so that people know it's a separate book. I don't know. But yeah, I think that's what it's going to be. And I think it's probably going to be one of those split books. So it's got some player stuff, some lore type stuff, or how to make or how to build or how to play characters in new and interesting ways at the first half. And then a bunch of class options in the back half.
Are you thinking it'll come out in November?
Of next year?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's going to be before that.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, I do think it's going to be before that.
All right, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going against the grain here. So November is the right time frame. All right, so we are fast approaching the end of our Morning Glory campaign.
Hurtling.
Our 3-year level 1 to 20 Eberron game.
Here we are, smack in the middle of the final session where the party is finally facing Bel-Shalor, the Shadow and the Flame, inside the Silver Flame, his own little domain where he basically holds all the cards. And he, very graciously, I might add, has said, you know what? Let's not fight.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going to remake the entire multiverse in my own image.
Mm-hmm.
But each of you, the 6 of you, I will give a 10th of this new creation. Do whatever you want with it.
How generous.
I'll keep the other 40%.
Right, of course.
What do you say? You can live forever. You can be gods. You know, all these souls that you'll be able to save. This is what I think you should do.
Yeah, he made a sales pitch to each of us.
In a slightly different way.
Right. All basically what was motivating us. Well, hey, you can go fix that in your little 10th of the universe. And I'll just like condemn 40% of it to torturous and hell. But, you know, 10% is yours.
I mean, compare it to the way the world is now.
Yeah. So we all looked at each other, locked eyes, kind of shrugged, and drew our swords.
Well, not everybody.
Yeah. Okay. So 5 of us. And longtime listeners might be thinking, it's that Brand, right? It's Brand. It's the Silver Flame Inquisitor has finally been tempted. He's been evil the entire time, and this is his turning point.
Right. So Kallax says, no, of course not. I am on the side of goodness and justice. And Emery says, no, of course, I've always been fighting against fiends like you. And Lou says, no, I can do it on my own.
Yeah, yeah, I was a Dalkeer. I'll be a Dalkeer again.
Bahar is like, no, I think I'm going to go with the others because we're a team. And Brand says,
no, you are literally the antithesis of my deity. I will restore the Silver Flame to righteousness and goodness.
And Bastion says, okay.
Yeah. Oh, hey. A home for the Warforge? Great, I'm in.
And so the party attacks and Bastion steps in the way. There was a little bit of, guys, maybe we should hear him out a little bit. And then there was smiting.
The rest of us went, that's a great story. We should definitely not do that.
So Bastion and Bel-Shalor take the brunt of an entire round of attacks from a 20th level plus party. And Bastion is worse for wear, but able to survive that initial onslaught. I think a few of you were pulling punches as well, right? I'll attack Bel-Shalor. I won't necessarily attack Bastion right away.
Right. We were trying to give him a chance to redeem himself.
Right. Instead of redeeming himself, Bastion looks over at Bel-Shalor and says, are you going to help me here?
Yeah, he goes, WTF, mate.
And Bel-Shalor says, it seems like you are on my side. Yes. And Bastion's wounds knit up in front of everyone. He seems to grow a little bit more in size, and fiendish bat wings sprout from his back. Mechanically, he also got an AC, HP, proficiency, and damage boost, and he got a few legendary resistances.
Oh, great.
And then you had 12-foot-tall, 800-pound Warforged Dreadnought made of stone and metal and wood with radiant fists.
And bat wings.
And bat wings. Who ran up and started punching all of you guys really hard.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing.
So the plane that this battle has started taking place on rumbles and then begins to rise slowly in the air. And the rest of the world, the rest of this city, the desert in the distance, all begins to fall away as this plateau now that the party is on rockets into the heavens. And the party can see all around them the world is falling away and these stars are falling out of the sky and the moons and heavenly orbs are melting and falling. And they can tell that this is the beginning of the end. Belshazzar is making his move. He is remaking the multiverse. And if they don't stop him, everything ends. Half of the party is spellcasters, but Belshazzar seems to be unaffected by their most powerful spells. Low-level spells still seem to work, though.
Yeah, our trickiest spells, as a matter of fact.
And Belshazzar is dishing it out as hard as the party is. He's using gouts of lightning that are bouncing around between all of them. He's throwing searing light at them. He controls the actions of some of them like puppets. Like, it's not mind control. It's just their body is gripped by some sort of force, and Kallik is forced to go through the motions of attacking his teammates, which is kind of tough because Kallik's a glass cannon.
Yeah, and then he gets knocked around a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, we all get scattered and we all have to run back up, you know.
Yeah, he flings several of you off of this plateau into the infinite chasm below.
Right.
I think you actually got knocked off the plateau and then you were flying at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had dragon wings. Yeah.
Emery got knocked down, I recall. And she like barely climbed up to the top of the plateau to cast Wish again so that everyone didn't die.
Right. Yeah, she used the Wish for a mass heal. Right.
But between Mega Bastion and Belshazzar and his legendary actions and his AoE spells, the party was not doing very well.
No. And it didn't hurt that we had the player playing Bastion laughing at how powerful he was and how much stronger he was and how little resources he had expended.
It really was happening. He's like, man, I haven't been hurt at all.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So how did the party get out of this predicament?
Well, for the first time, period, Brand cast a wish.
An actual wish.
An actual wish with wording and everything.
Not like, I will heal the party of 700 damage.
No, I will not replicate a lower level spell. I will not use any of the things that risk me being unable to recast Wish. But this seemed like the time to do it. Like, if I was going to burn out that spell, this seems like a good time. Yeah.
33% seems like good odds.
Yeah, yeah. So I rolled it. My wish was that we had what we needed to save the multiverse. A.K.A. I threw myself completely at Ishin's feet. And then I think you were like a little bit stunned that I had left it so open-ended. And then like before you even said anything, I was like, oh, and I used Divine Intervention, which is like my level 20 epic boon, which is like the cleric ability, which is like a minor wish almost. And I was like, and I use this to make sure it works.
Yeah, you did that. And I was like, I don't think there's a way I can weasel out of this. I think this happens. Man, all right. Touche.
Yeah. Look, if you're not going to abuse Wish,
you're going to double abuse it,
right.
But right at the end, yeah. When it counts. And in that moment, Cube, their artifact companion, who is the remnant of Primus, the great chain of being, and one of the greatest foes of Belshazzar, speaks up in a tiny, tinny voice and says, I think I can help.
And we'll find out what happens next week. Possibly for the last time. But this week, we're going to talk about tieflings.
Yeah, speaking of fiends.
So, full disclosure, Ishin has been wanting to do this episode since we started talking about non-human player races.
I didn't know, but I've been wanting to do this episode since I played Planescape Torment.
Okay. And every time we come up, it's like, oh, we should do another race. And he's like, let's do tieflings. I'm like, no.
Right. You were even like, let's do elves instead.
I know.
Shane hates elves and tieflings.
My hatred goes only so far.
In research for this, I discovered that there are tiefling elves.
Oh, lovely. I bet they shop at Hot Topic.
Yes, they work there.
Yeah.
Gadzooks. So a tiefling, for those of you who don't know, is a human with fiendish ancestry. Some games outside of D&D, they might be called, you know, tainted or devilkin or something like that.
Fiend-touched.
Yeah. They're not half-fiends. They're not cambions. One parent is not a fiend. They're more distantly related than that. And it's like this catch-all phrase. You can have any kind of fiend in your background. Maybe it's a demon. Maybe it's a devil. Maybe it's some other weird kind of thing. Because, you know, there are a million kind of freaking Yugoloth type fiends in D&D. But non-human versions also did pop up, right? The elf version is a fairy. The orc version is the Tanaruk, which we actually saw in Volo's guide.
Yeah.
The dwarf was called a Maluth.
So you mentioned it a bit earlier, but where did tieflings first pop up?
Monty Cook. They came out in Planescape, along with two other races, the Githzerai and the Barriar. I don't know if I'm saying that right. The like half sheep people.
I think it's Barrier.
Sure, we'll go with that.
I mean, whatever. It's got letters.
Yeah, so you got to blame Monty for this.
Yeah.
He's the one who came up with the tieflings.
Right. So they were a PC race in the Planar Handbook in 3rd edition, and then in Races of Destiny.
And then in 4th edition, they became a core race and got a big old makeover. Rather than just being some kind of fiend in your background, they were explicitly tied to devils, and they were descendants of a human civilization, Baal Turath, that made a pact with, I think, explicitly Asmodeus.
And this is where I began to hate them.
Me too, actually, because they started to look dumb. They looked awesome in 2nd edition and in 3rd edition as well. And then 4th edition, they were just like, I got big horns and a dragon tail.
Yeah, well, they took the place of races that I associated as core fantasy races, and that was sort of
the gnome,
the rub. Yes, the gnome.
Wait, you like gnomes?
No, I don't like gnomes, but I feel like they're more core to fantasy than
right,
tieflings.
Next up in this series is going to be gnomes.
Oh, don't make me do that.
And you're going to write it.
Oh. I want to make a devil's bargain, please.
In 5th edition, the background of tieflings is a bit looser. It's not necessarily Asmodeus. It's not necessarily Baal Turath. But the origin is still very heavily devil-specific. And in fact, I think we got an Unearthed Arcana where there's an Abyssal Tiefling, which is dumb, by the way. Like, don't play that. that is like demon ancestry.
Okay, so kind of getting into our usual topics for this series. What are some reasons to play a Tiefling?
This is the one we always say to like make fun of people, but it's totally true. You play a Tiefling because you want to stick out.
Yeah, you're a special snowflake.
And they got a bad rap for that in 2nd edition, partly because of the way that they were presented in the book. There was a massive random table in the Planeswalker handbook. You rolled 5 times and replaced the stock tiefling racial traits. And the options are insane. Actually, 1d4chan replicates the entire freaking table. It's insane. You could get really, really weird looks or new spell-like abilities or resistances. Some of these were totally OP. You might smell like rotted meat, or sunlight might damage you, or you could just be immune to weapons that weren't magic or silver.
Yep.
Later editions really, really toned down this stuff.
And you got to remember, in 2nd edition, there was a lot of this random stuff at character creation, but everyone came to the table with their characters rolled. Like, the idea of Session Zero was not new at the time, but it also wasn't as common for a lot of players that are sort of shaping the direction of the game today, right? Because we were younger at that point. So it was teenagers came with this stuff, or even younger, right? And they were like, oh, cool. So I just randomly rolled the immunity to everything that isn't magical. Great. and along with double zero in your strength and everything else, it's like, okay, cool. Like, you definitely rolled that randomly. I trust you.
Yeah.
You know? So it's one of those things where when you make more random things, it just got abused.
Yeah, no one really showed up with my fingers are 1 inch longer than normal.
Right, yeah. So another tiefling motif. Oh, man, that's terrible sounding. But you've got something to prove. You've got a chip on your shoulder. So usually tieflings are kind of assumed to be more fiend than human, right? So they're seen as evil, they're seen as manipulators, it gives you an easy way to play against type, right? You could be the noble tiefling, and mm-hmm. it fits that with your charisma bonus, you fit into plenty of the paladin type classes, right? The paladin, the bard, all these sort of party friendly, relatively good aligned kind of classes.
Yeah, if you're planning an arc where you're sort of like downtrodden, beat down, and then, you know, you have to earn the trust of like the people you're working for, maybe even your party, and then like at higher levels you get to feel like I really did like earn this, and I am trusted for really good reasons despite the way that I look or smell.
Mm.
Maybe tiefling is for you.
Yeah.
It's also good if you want to be that character that is appealing and scary at the same time. Like if you just want to be scary, you can be a half-orc. You could be a dragonborn.
Yeah. Yeah, if you just want to be that sort of force of personality, you could be a half-elf.
Who are actually probably mechanically better than tieflings.
Yeah, well, they're better than everything, yeah. So.
But if you want both at the same time built in, tiefling is for you.
So you're going to get a lot of different traits as a tiefling. And as Sword Coast Adventures has come out, you've got some more options for sort of descriptive abilities. Mm-hmm. But you want to keep in mind that question we always ask. So are you typical or are you unique in that quality?
Yeah, you don't have to be this particular way, but most of your kind are. And how do you respond to that?
Yeah, and I mean, that goes to appearance, right? Do you look like a typical tiefling, or are you particularly subtle or particularly overt? Or things like you smell faintly of brimstone, you know, yeah. Like maybe all tieflings smell faintly of brimstone, and it's not that unusual as a tiefling.
Maybe you're just particularly brimstony.
Right.
So first off, they get +2 to charisma. A lot has changed with tieflings since they first came out, but they've always had a charisma bonus. They might look repulsive to some people. Some people might find them terrifying with their devil horns and their tails, but there's always something about them that's alluring. There's something that draws people to them.
Yeah, they also get a +1 to intelligence, which is fitting for their sort of devious, schemey sort of nature, and that probably fits the devil ancestry best, right?
Yeah, I think so. You could say, no, they just happen to be more intelligent because like their planes touched in some way, but everyone believes that it is because they are devious and scheming, and they get training and contracts and they're lawyers.
And if you're not that way, then, you know, maybe you're just curious.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide introduces the Ferial Tiefling, which gives you a +2 dex bonus instead of charisma.
This I found a little strange because it's the first time we see a tiefling that doesn't get a charisma bonus.
Yeah.
You know, they're nimble and fast-fingered. I guess this fits with like the street urchin archetype.
Yeah, I think it's probably one that is less exposed to people, mm-hmm. right? And that's why Feral is a fitting title for it. But if you aren't getting a chance to exercise that charisma around people, then you're going to be better at avoiding them, mm-hmm. right?
I will say that don't get stuck on the Feral title. This +2 dex, +1 intelligence really fits a type of person who's sort of grown up in the shadows and wants to stay in the shadows, which seems really likely if you have big freaking devil horns and a long dragon tail.
Yeah, I would say that's a great way to make yourself look strange. Take that dex bonus, you know?
Just hide in the shadows all the time.
Exactly.
Which you can do because you have dark vision.
So no need to worry about that.
It used to be a lot weirder in second edition. You're like, oh, you can see in the dark. That's pretty creepy and strange. You know, like in darkness.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Because there's no low light vision anymore. Like everyone has dark vision.
Right.
So,
Yep. You also get fire resistance.
We've talked about this before in previous iterations of this series. This is the kind of ability that totally changes your mindset about certain things. Like if you grow up and you never get heat stroke, you may be working the forge or shoveling coal, and it's just less painful because you don't get nearly as burnt as everyone else. How do you feel about that? Do people look at you as someone who's strange because of that, or do they admire you a bit?
Yeah, that's totally one of those social class questions too, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're the apprentice of a blacksmith, you're incredibly handy because you could just reach in and grab the crucible, right? Maybe if you're the son of a noble, it's a lot riskier that you're playing with fire all the time.
Yeah. I like tiefling chef.
Oh, okay.
Where's your spatula? I don't use one.
Yeah. Wash your hands, young man. So you'll also get some innate spells. Thaumaturgy, which is the cleric version of Prestidigitation.
Note that like almost all of the abilities are creepy things. Slamming doors and windows.
Yeah.
Moaning sounds and whispers.
You'll also get Hellish Rebuke, which is just retaliation for getting hit. Kind of that fiendish anger.
Yeah. And when you use it, do people go, oh, typical tiefling.
Right. And then, of course, the darkness spell.
Yeah. Which, remember, you can't see through normally.
Right.
And then Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide offers some spells that you can swap out for these. They're mostly mind-affecting things like Vicious Mockery and Thrall. Mind control spells.
Yeah.
Again, that fits really well with the devil flavor.
So we've talked a little bit about appearance, but right now you've got options like large horns, thick tails, basically the same kind of look as 4th edition.
Yeah, that's the stock tiefling that you get in the player's handbook in 5th edition. And I don't like the look. I think you don't like the look either, Shane.
No, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's to me, I look at it and go, that's not a tiefling. That's basically a dragonborn to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. No, I like the idea of, as a tiefling, you kind of blend in much better.
Yeah, you're always worried about getting found out.
Right.
You know, I always order eggs because I want people to think it's them and like not my sulfur smell.
Right.
Right. Like Nightcrawler.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
I like the little horns and the forked tail version. And, you know, this honestly for me, this probably harkens back to Torment, where like the tiefling that you could pick up as part of your character had like this weird little rat tail, but she didn't have like massive horns.
Right.
Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide does let players choose some of the more iconic and like non-game-breaking physical characteristics that were on that original chart. So you don't cast a shadow or you don't have a reflection.
What about wings?
You can get wings. that's not listed under non-game-breaking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, wings are definitely overpowered, especially at low levels. So,
and there's no restriction on those wings, right?
Right.
Heavy armor, fine.
I would like to imagine they're little imp wings, you know? Just tiny little things, but it's magical flight, so.
it's totally fine. Keep in mind that is not Adventurers League legal.
Right.
Just the wings.
Okay, so let's talk about tiefling culture, as much as they have one.
Well, PHB says they tend toward chaos, but doesn't say anything about them actually being evil. They have a reputation for it, but there isn't anything innate about them that's evil.
Right. And then they also choose names sort of based on which heritage they identify with more. So if they see themselves as more infernal, you're going to get a devilish kind of name. If they see themselves as more human, then you're going to get something that kind of matches the nation they're in.
Mm-hmm. In terms of society, tieflings don't typically have their own nation, right? Maybe they're the descendant of that ancient empire, but it's also very likely that fiendish blood just sort of popped up randomly in the gene pool and like, here you go.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Right.
And that really determines how you interact with other tieflings. Like, do you even know any other tieflings? How do you even know that you're a tiefling?
Right.
Right? Like, if you just have little fangs and like, you're born with a tail, you probably just hide that tail and don't tell anyone.
Yeah, and it's totally possible that, you know, tiefling blood could run recessive for a long time and then just suddenly pop up with two parents, right? So you might have human parents and be yourself a tiefling.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, you're going to have a very different outlook on life than if you were born of two tiefling parents who, you know, have dealt with that sort of worldview about them.
We're expecting it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of religion, unlike kobolds who like say, oh, we have dragon blood, and so like we worship dragons, you don't usually get tieflings who are into worshiping fiends so much. You'll get a warlock, which we'll get into later.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably going for whatever religious view that the nation that you're born to has.
Yeah.
Right. So if they're human gods that you worship, great. If it's sort of more neutral, no sweat off your back.
Yeah. I think most tieflings who want to stay alive try to blend in.
Yeah.
So, like, Arathis sounds nice. As for family ties, your childhood really depends on how does that gene pool play out that Shane was just talking about. Do you have two human parents? Do you have tiefling parents? Likely you were raised by humans, but if someone gives birth to a kid that looks like a little devil, usually you get left outside.
Yeah. you know, and alternatively, in some settings, you could have like a tiefling colony, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it wouldn't be strange in Sigil to have a colony of tieflings that
right.
kind of grow up as a community. it's probably a little bit stranger in a place like, oh, say, Birthright.
Maybe it turns out that one parent has a secret.
Yeah.
I've been passing.
Right.
That smell, that's been me. And with your +2 charisma bonus, it's not difficult to find a romantic partner, but it's probably hard to maintain a relationship, especially if you've got those big horns.
Yeah.
And, you know, long term, who wants to have a kid who has devil blood?
Yeah, who would bring a kid into this world mm-hmm. who would have to deal with that kind of difficulty that you've dealt with?
Yeah. Actually, one of the things you could roll on that giant chart in second edition was sterile.
Oh, well, that's convenient.
Done.
Solve that problem.
Your interactions with pretty much the entire world are going to be based on how obvious are your fiendish features.
Yeah, if the disposition towards tieflings is generally negative, then the closer you identify with a tiefling, the more you're going to have to defend your heritage or prove yourself kind of worthy of being a member of society.
Mm-hmm. And you may not have that choice. If you've got big horns and a giant tail, that's your life.
Yeah.
It may get less necessary at later levels. You know, your 15th level, probably peasants, well, after you kill the first one, won't be attacking you as you walk around.
Yeah, and, you know, like, as a DM, this is maybe something that you introduce in an early session, like in a tavern brawl or something. You're highlighting the nature of the town you're in is sort of very provincial or very bucolic.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to sort of spark violence or potential violence with good aligned creatures and then see how your party deals with that.
Yeah. What about dealing with other fiends, though? Because it's likely, regardless of how subtle your features, that, you know, if you run across a devil or maybe even some of the more intelligent demons, that they would recognize that and, you know, maybe try and use it against you.
Yeah, I cannot imagine they wouldn't notice that.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, they may absolutely focus on you. In attacks, right? Maybe demons specifically like try to attack you and kill you.
Right. Well, because you're a devil.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I can't attack actual devils, but I can sure as hell attack their kids.
You're here.
Yeah.
The other option is it could be that fiends spare you. Like they don't attack you because they're trying to trick either the party or NPCs into thinking that you are allies.
Yeah. They might see you as the easier one to tempt, as sort of the weak link.
Yeah. Or, you know, they just might be like, well, you I'll keep alive because you're useful.
Yeah. I see a little bit of myself in you, kid. You got a lot of moxie.
That's right. Plane shift.
Yeah.
You enjoy that.
And then how do we tie in our relationships with other player characters?
This is something I think is great for a session zero. You know, being presented with, wait, how do I feel about having a tiefling in the party?
Yeah.
Have you met other tieflings?
Yeah, and I think this is probably an above-the-table conversation as well mm-hmm. of, as a player, do I want to deal with inter-party conflict, right? Like, do I need, and as a GM as well, right? Do I need my all of my characters to accept this, or do I want to deal with the possibility that something could befall a tiefling character that other characters are just going to allow to happen?
I think you need to come to some kind of often a compromise
yeah.
about like everyone actually having fun, but then trying to keep relatives at verisimilitude. And I think a lot of it sort of depends on, you know, in the backstories of these other characters, have they fought fiends before?
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to be like, oh, there are fiends out there and we're probably going to go fight some eventually, mm-hmm. you know, but oh, here's this person that I know.
Yeah.
And they can't help it. But if you've been through the blood war.
True. I mean, you still got the option for, oh, but he's one of the good ones, you know,
yeah.
like he's proven himself that he hates fiends and his own fiendish nature as much as anyone, you know, he's Angel, basically like the Angel to your Buffy.
And then there are specific races that you might have very particular relationships with. First, the one I'm thinking of is Asimar.
Yeah, because you've got a similar sort of origin story.
Yeah. And if I honestly think if there is any race that is going to give you the benefit of the doubt, it's probably an Asimar, who is by their nature like directed toward good.
Yeah, they kind of have the opposite sort of experience, right? Like mm-hmm. they're probably held to a higher standard.
Yeah, and they didn't do anything to earn this.
Yeah, like I don't want that hassle, guys. Meanwhile, they see the tiefling trying so hard to prove himself. It's like, hey, look, we could share here.
Share the load.
Yeah.
I got some good deeds for you to do. Yeah,
exactly.
In Volo's guide, the new Asuma write-up, they get that like spiritual advisor, that angel, mm-hmm. that like sort of tells them what to do. So that could be an interesting interplay, because you have this lawful good angel who actually may be very unreasonable when it comes to a tiefling.
Yeah.
And then the Asuma playing intermediary. Yep. Or vice versa, the angel being like, well, all you humans are like, all of you humanoids are actually pretty similar.
I mean, I could also see like a buddy cop type situation where you got like the Asimar on the tiefling and, you know, the angel on the Asimar's shoulder, but then the tiefling is also the devil on the Asimar's shoulder. It's like, yeah, but this way is more fun. It's not evil what we're doing. It's just the more fun way of approaching things.
Let me explain to you the difference between evil and chaos.
Right.
And I think another kind of race that might sort of see an affinity for tieflings could be Genasi, because they are also similarly plain touched and weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And in certain settings, I think Genasi and tieflings also play that kind of foil. You know, like Dark Sun, for example, Genasi mm-hmm. sort of fill the same role as the Asimar.
Right.
Just because there's, you know, there's no celestials, so elementals become the de facto elemental touch.
Right. And I think Genasi owe their existence to tieflings, because once tieflings were around, they're like, well, we kind of need to do half human, half other things from the planes.
Yeah.
So what does that look like?
Right.
So as a tiefling, what are some particular reasons that you might go adventuring?
So we've talked about it, but depending on your relationship with society at large, you might be adventuring to prove yourself, mm-hmm. you know, to add value to society and earn your keep.
Yeah, the only reason anyone will think anything good of me is if I make a name for myself.
Right. There's also the exact inverse of that, which is I'm trying to stay on the move.
Yeah.
Society does not see me in a very positive light, and I don't want it to catch up with me.
Yeah, people notice these horns pretty often.
Yeah.
I could also see a tiefling who is out there trying to figure out a way to not be a tiefling, like cleanse their own blood somehow.
I like the idea of searching for something. That's one option. Another one is searching for a parent, right? Mm-hmm. Or an ancestor, not a parent, but
mean the devil that spawned them?
Yeah, something like that. Or maybe for the truth, you know, if you don't realize you're a tiefling or you don't understand sort of the greater cosmology of the world, maybe you're just looking to figure out, why do I have these horns? No one else has horns. They don't look like orc horns. My parents are both human. What's going on with me? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, I like this idea a lot in a setting that doesn't have a lot of tieflings and where like it's not a commonly known term.
Yeah, and where, you know, devils aren't just walking around talking, you know?
Sorry, Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
So mechanically, after Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, when you have an option between +2 charisma or +2 dexterity, you can be good at basically any class in the game.
Yeah, so the core charisma classes, of course, the sorcerer, bard, paladin, warlock, natural fits for the tiefling.
Yeah, you're almost an ideal warlock.
Yeah, or sorcerer.
Or bard.
Yeah.
And while you don't have strength for paladin, you be a really nice defensive paladin, because you're still in that heavy armor and shield, and you're going to have a very high aura saving throw boost.
Right. And then with the feral tiefling, you get the inverse of those, right?
Yeah, all so those martial classes.
The rogue, fighter, ranger, monk, even.
Yeah, I love monk tiefling.
I actually like the rogue here because of the swashbuckler.
Oh.
You can actually play either tiefling as a rogue pretty effectively.
And then maybe they like sort of revel in their like tieflingness.
Right, yeah. And don't forget the tiefling that branded you, sir. You're like Zorro. You just keep carving the T into things. I'm not a tiefling. I am the tiefling.
The fox? Close.
Right. And then wizard kind of works.
Yeah, you do have +1 to intelligence. Dex is nice, but you could even be, you know, that haughty, charismatic wizard.
Yeah.
But, you know, Dex Bladesinger actually works really well.
It does.
The only thing that I think is kind of difficult is barbarian.
Oh, barbarian is difficult for many races. and druid and cleric don't have any natural synergy either.
I like the idea of cleric, though, like raised in the temple.
Because the temple is the only one who would take you in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, this is my atonement.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't like that as much because I feel like the flavor around the tiefling just lends itself so well to like kind of a more nihilistic worldview that the strength of faith required to become a cleric is sort of counter to what I think of when I think of playing a tiefling.
Well, here's what I like for any tiefling base is first level rogue one, because rogue one and you're an urchin growing up on the street.
Yep.
Second level knowledge cleric one.
Yep.
Because they took you into the temple. Right. And then you realize this isn't really for me. I appreciate it, but I'm striking out on my own. Level three is whatever you want.
Level three is sorcerer, and now you're Bran. No, I do like that, as using knowledge cleric as your education almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's talk about combat.
You got so many options because you could be almost any class, right? If you're charisma based, you're probably some sort of spell slinger.
Yep, and if you're dex-based, you can probably hang in there in melee, or you're a natural range fighter.
Right, and with all the different options from Sword Coast Adventures Guide, you could be a talker, right, who can do that from range, or you can, you know, have those burning hands or hellish rebuke abilities where you stay in close and retaliate.
Yeah, and this versatility actually might turn some wheels in your head as you're listening to this, because you could actually do an all tiefling campaign and have quite a bit of diversity between feral and core tieflings and their different appearance and sort of special characteristics. You could actually get a decent amount of diversity and be in different classes and still be relatively effective in each of those classes.
Hashtag not all tieflings.
Right. I mean, that's the campaign, right?
Skills again, dexterity and charisma. Interaction, they just naturally gravitate toward it.
Yep.
Or skulking around.
Yep. So there's no magic items tied to tieflings, other than the general fiendishly associated cursed items. Right. You know, nothing really fits in as tieflings, because tieflings don't really have an innate culture that's well-defined in most settings.
Yeah. Dwarves make them for other dwarves, but there aren't really tieflings around making them for other tieflings.
Right.
But ask your GM, you might be able to use some of those fiendish items that you find that are like specifically for use by devils.
Yeah.
That's probably going to come with some baggage.
Yeah. things that would alter your appearance make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to keep a low profile. Don't want those horns out and about all the time.
Yeah. Why are you adventuring? I want to buy a hat of disguise.
Yeah.
And then high-powered, like, holy relics, where if you're walking around with it, people have to go, hold on, you can't be evil. I see that you've got the mitre of St. Cuthbert.
Right. The white robes of the Magi. Interesting.
It wouldn't let you wear those if it didn't like you.
Right. So like most human beings, I will immediately defer all of my intelligence to an object.
You're wearing the right uniform. Yeah. So.
That makes sense. Great. All right. So what's your takeaway on tieflings? What's your sales pitch for the tiefling?
I love that they're so varied and that you can be a special snowflake without having to take over an entire game, right? I'd like to play the secret tiefling.
Mm.
I got tiny little horns, but I wear a hat. I got some fangs, and I don't cast a shadow. If you know what you're looking for, you can find me. But if I'm careful and I'm good, I think I can get by in this world.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it is a character secret that can be very present at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times people build those secrets into their backstory and they don't have a real way of coming out that works in the game. But tiefling does.
Plus, they've got an excellent provenance.
Do you hear that, Ishan?
I believe I dropped the mitre of St. Cuthbert.
Well, it's time to find somebody worthy of picking it up.
Mm.
So let's move on to the Character Creation Forge. Before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, at Mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, at Evil Sans Carne, that's Malice Minus Meat.
And you can tweet at the show, at TPTcast.
You can also email us if you can fit it into 140 characters at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at TotalPartyThrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are borrowing from our topic, and we are creating the Faustian Fiddler.
totally not playing against type.
Right.
So like Robert Johnson or Paganini, there have always been stories of musicians so dedicated to their craft that they would sell their soul to the devil.
Despite your best efforts, I know you're from Tennessee. I know you know about the devil who went down to Georgia.
I spent some time in Tennessee. I'm not from there.
Whatever. The point is, you're leaving out Johnny, and you're not doing him any service. He's got a golden fiddle, all right?
This musician actually sold their soul. The goal is we're trying to get basically as high a skill check as possible. Now, maybe you're thinking, oh, they did this with the grappler. Yeah, but this one sold their soul to the devil, and so can actually do a little better.
Yeah. All right, so what's the build?
Lore Bard 14.
Makes sense.
Fiendish Warlock 6.
Okay. So Bard, we're going to get expertise, lots of skills, so jack of all trades, all that sort of stuff. Very party-friendly sort of mechanics.
Yeah, so actually a useful character.
And one that's themed around, you know, using that instrument that you're the master of.
Yep, it could be multiple instruments.
Yeah, well, it should be instruments of the Bard, right? The magic items.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then at level 14, you'll get Peerless Skill, which allows you to use Bardic Inspiration on your own skill checks, giving you a bonus D10.
But wait, why don't we go to level 15 and make that a D12?
Because we want some Warlock, Ishan.
Six whole levels, huh?
Uh-huh.
What happens in six levels of Warlock?
Well, you'll get three Invocations. That gets you your Eldritch Blast powered up.
I like that you're a very good Bard. And, you know, 14 levels of Bard is a good character.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a really nicely souped up Eldritch Blast.
Yep.
The Pact of the Tome will give you three cantrips from any class. One of those should be Guidance, which will give you an extra D4 in your skill check.
Yep. And then, of course, you sold your soul to a devil, so we have to be a Fiend Pack Warlock. That gets us Dark One's Own Luck at level 6, a plus D10 to a skill roll.
So we're looking at plus 2D10, plus D4, plus Expertise.
And you're rolling a d20.
Not bad.
No, I feel like a maximum roll of 44 plus 12 with expertise and the charisma book, right, to get to 22 charisma. So a maximum roll of 56.
Eh.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good for Pathfinder.
Those were good numbers for 4th edition. Okay?
Yeah. We did it. We broke it.
You know, it's for fiddling, but still.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, I think with a 56, people's heads explode.
Yeah, somebody's face melts.
Literally.
Yeah.
All right, Shane. So how did your Faustian fiddler make their deal?
I mean, sometimes you just want to melt faces, right? I mean, I know this isn't quite canon, but I feel like he plays an electric guitar. I feel like he has a magical guitar that plays electric. It's like he's not a blues guitarist. He is just rocking power ballads and full on metal solos.
Hear me out. One of the cantrips is Shocking Grasp, which powers the guitar.
I love it. Yes, that's it. And then, you know, this is, of course, channeled into his Eldritch Blast. Because, of course, his guitar shoots laser beams. Because nothing is more metal than that. But, yeah, I mean, his goal is to literally melt faces.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, every time he does melt somebody's face, because of Dark One's blessing, he gains some temporary HP.
That face is delicious.
Exactly. So tell me about your Faustian fiddler.
Mine is a slighted country musician. He performed for a court, did very well, you know, practiced his heart out, and was probably the best in the land, but just never got quite the recognition or the pay. In fact, he got stiffed. And so he decides, you know, I'm going to teach these people a lesson. Makes a pact, right? Sells his soul at a crossroads and becomes the world's best piper.
Oh.
Walks into town late one night and starts playing a beautiful, haunting melody that attracts all the children of the town.
This is dark. I don't think you're building a PC.
No, I don't think so. Well, this is the backstory. This is before level 1.
Oh, great. Makes sense.
And then, you know, leads them off and they create their own town, a socialist utopia.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, yeah, perfect. Fine. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Chaotic good.
Yeah, heart of gold. He's Neil Young. Great. All right. If you want to support the show, even after that, the easiest way to do that is to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you're willing to help us out, we will read your 5-star review on the air.
You can also find us on Stitcher. It's like a Pandora for podcasts. If you like or favorite us there, the algorithm will help other people find us.
And we have a review this week, Ishan.
It is from ChainsawBoy63. Title, totally accurate. 5 stars. Discovered this excellent podcast just recently and enjoyed it quite a bit. While geared towards D&D, it offers thoughts and advice that can be applied to all RPGs. Thanks for making it.
Thank you for listening, ChainsawBoy63. So, what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We'll actually be answering your questions in a mailbag episode.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We're building the Flash. Like that, the Flash.
This should be over quick. That's it for episode 72 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we've lived up to our name. But either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.